From all corners of the globe to your ears, it's the Midnight Movie Cowboys. Sometimes informative, sometimes controversial, but always unpredictable. It's the Midnight Movie Cowboys podcast with your hosts, Hunter, John, and Stu. And now, on with the show.
Welcome to week four of Rock Month. I'm Hunter Dusing, and joining me for this very darkness of dark episodes of the Midnight Movie Cowboys, we have down in Melbourne, Australia, Mr. Stuart Balk. Say hello, Stu.
Hello, Stu. And I believe in a thing called love. Just listen to the rhythm of my heart.
And in the Rocky Mountain High of Colorado, he's really growing on me. We've got Mr. John Grace.
Yeah. Hi, everybody.
John's all rocked out. He's all rocked out.
Way too much rocking. I mean, John got a one-way ticket to hell and back. He got some hot cakes, and it turned out he was the last of his kind, and he got permission to land back on the show. So,
that's it.
Right. Okay. That was goofy. Anyway, week four of Rock Month, Stu, who are we doing?
We are doing The Darkness.
The Darkness.
Yes.
The Dankness. The Darkness. So you're a really big fan of The Darkness, right?
Yes.
We got a request to do this, and you know, we were like, well, Stuart's a big fan. I know John likes him, so let's do it. Who gave us that request, by the way?
I'm sorry, I don't remember. You'll probably scream at me, whoever it is, going, "You idiot, it was..." Hey, my apologies. A lot of shit's happened since then. And but yeah, we're doing it. And can't say I'm actually disappointed that we are, because I really, really like The Darkness a lot.
Yeah, because you've often been like you've been a pretty vocal fan.
Yeah, seen him live as well.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
How was that?
Fantastic. It was at a small venue here. It was just after they reformed in 2012. And they were finishing this leg in Australia, then heading into the studio to record Hot Cakes.
Mm. Very
and
nice.
So they premiered a couple of songs that were then unheard and new. And, but they played pretty much all of Permission to Land, the majority of One Way Ticket to Hell and Back, and, like I said, a couple of new ones as well. Great! I got to actually pat Justin Hawkins on the back. He jumped off stage or walked off stage because it was only a small place. And
I saw them live on the Hot Cakes tour, and it was a small venue. It was the same place I saw Naked Ray Gun. That's how small it was.
Oh wow!
Yeah.
Well, they were on the
strange
comeback
because they were going to be a huge thing when Permission to Land was released. They were on their way to being.
Oh, they were. You could not escape.
Yeah,
you could not escape. I Believe in a Thing Called Love. You could not escape that song.
And Love Is Only a Feeling was massive as well.
Yeah. And also the heated disputes between like rock fans and like the serious rock fans and the rock fans that didn't know if they were kidding. Like I think that was a huge problem with the reception in the States.
That was huge. Yeah. I remember that same argument as well. People going, "This guy's vocals are just stupid. They're a joke band." I'm like, "They're not a joke band. That's a guy's falsetto voice. That's the way he sings, you know? People didn't think of Queen as a joke band when Freddie would sing the high notes, but you know, they're not like Steel Panther, where they are literally a parody, you know, a joke, and they make right. no bones about it. Whereas The Darkness, people just didn't know how to take The Darkness. Here's his fantastic rock music and this falsetto voice. So,
yeah, and the videos were real goofy, and they wore like the costumes. Like one of them was dressed up like a gay village biker. So,
probably, yeah. I remember Lemmy wrote an article about how I believe in a thing called love is a novelty song, and this is not a serious band. And he sort of wrote this thing trashing them. It was kind of documented in the Lemmy documentary that we've kind of trashed on this show. Mm. And they acted like, and then Lemmy and was it Dave Grohl introduced Lemmy to Justin Higgins at the Rainbow or something. And Justin was kind of hostile, but then like, you know, oh, he kind of warmed up to Lemmy or something. But it was one of those things where I was like, I don't know, what are you trying to do by like slamming this? Like, Stuart, you were saying that like nobody said Queen bad things about Queen, but Queen were kind of hated by critics, right? When they first came out.
I don't know about America. I mean, I know it took them forever and a day to break in the U.S.
In America, they were hated.
Yeah, I just remember thinking that – I remember reading stuff like critics saying that they were like a joke and that their music was goofy and over the top.
I will recall a story. Yeah. I was talking to my father a number of years back, and he was talking about a festival that was over here in Melbourne, which he went to with – don't know if Mum went as well, but I know Dad went to it with some friends probably. Queen played. This was 1974. They just released Queen 1, their first album, and Dad said they were booed off the stage. Granted, that was early on in their career, but yeah, they were booed off.
I mean, the Ramones were booed off the stage too. You know, that doesn't mean...
Yeah, but they didn't really care. Right. They were so glued out of their anyway.
Oh, they were flipping off the crowd and stuff, just walking off.
Yeah.
But,
Prince was booed off the stage, famously, in the early days. So it's not anything unusual.
Yeah. But I can tell you, I know my earliest memory of Queen would be about at least 1980 when The Game came out. They were big then over here, so I don't think it took as long to break over here as it did.
Yeah, they were pretty – The Game was one of their biggest albums because it had Another One Bites the Dust on it, you know.
Well, We Are the Champions, We Will Rock You was a monster hit in 77 or whenever on New Orleans radio. You couldn't get away from it. And I was a little kid and I knew who they were. You know, you just could not escape that song. It was played constantly on TV. You know, it was used for commercials and stuff. And radio is just a monster hit. And I guess Queen played a famous show at the Superdome. They were so big in New Orleans.
John, do you know how many people think that We Will Rock You and We're the Champions are one song when it's actually not?
Oh, I know.
Separate? They think they're two. They think it's one song just broken up into two bits.
And that's because radio stations played them back to back. I don't know if that's how the single was, but that's how they were played on the radio.
No. The single was just the We Will Rock You or We Are the Champions. They were never joined together, except on the album, obviously.
Well, I think he means like the DJs would play them one after the other. So.
Yeah, the DJs would play them back to back like it was one song. Always. They always did it. And I think that's why that perception exists.
Just because there wasn't enough time. I don't know if I remember hearing an interview with Freddie Mercury or Brian May or reading something where they said that they deliberately left so little amount of time in between the songs that they had to play them back to back. The record couldn't get out of the DJ couldn't get out of the record and have something else queued up because it was so minimal amount of time. So I don't know if that was predetermined. I think they said it was predetermined, sorry. But yeah, getting back to The Darkness anyway, yeah, they definitely deemed as a bit of a joke and, you know, snickered at and treated with a bit of disdain, but...
Yeah, because I remember people talking about, like, oh, this band... I remember people sit on both sides of the aisle when this came out, some people going, oh my gosh, this band is getting back to the music I love, you know, oh, this is what I'm talking about. And then I heard people saying, like, oh, this is a joke, you know, this is... terrible. It's you know, it's goofy, you know. So,
but I figure if you like rock or metal, even though The Darkness aren't a metal band, they are definitely a rock and roll band.
Mm-hmm.
If you can take King Diamond's vocals, you can take Justin Hawkins.
Oh, absolutely. People take King Diamond totally seriously, and that guy's goofy as heck. I mean,
too goofy.
I mean, I think Merciful Fate's Don't Break the Oath is a rad album, but I mean, come on, silly.
John, John, come on,
yeah.
Say it.
What?
Say it.
Oh,
King Diamond. It's great.
Anytime King Diamond mentioned, it's like, I'm just going to defer straight to you. You better be on your toes, boy. You know what we're talking about.
First of all, Fate. I was King Diamond for the costume party.
He lives.
There's a video. I got rid of it.
He lives out here in Plano, Texas.
Oh, he's in Plano, isn't he? Holy shit.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, he lives in like a little suburban house out in Plano.
I wonder if that's the one that you drive by. It's got like, you know, goat skulls on the front lawn.
You would think, but there was an episode of like Metal Evolution or something where Sam Dunn walks up to King Diamond's house, and it is the most nondescript Plano house.
Yeah, I remember, like, yeah, it's just like tree, yeah, like green trees at the front.
Yeah, and it's like brown bricks.
Yeah.
You know? Like, you listen to a King Diamond record, you'd think he'd live out in this manor on the hill with like his cat, you know, and a house full of ghouls and like grandma in a wheelchair or something. But no.
That's Clint Danzig's house.
Yeah.
Actually, did you see a story someone put out? They said that Glenn Danzig is the filthiest neighbor they've ever had in their life.
It's like bags
of garbage piled up everywhere and like broken bricks all on his front lawn.
I heard that story that he was like throwing, like, I'm throwing away my bricks, you know. It's like, I can't imagine Danzig would be a great neighbor. And plus, he'd probably come up to you and talk to you about his book collection, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, was it the one, the Lost Chapters of the Bible, whatever it's called?
I got this book on the Lost Chapters of the Bible, and there's this one book where Jesus kills a guy. It's pretty dark.
Yeah, sure thing, Glenn. No worries. Yeah, no worries. You wish. If I lived next door to Glenn Danzig, you know what I'd do? I'd just be printing out those Danzig memes and just sticking them on his front window every day.
Just Henry and Glenn Forever comics.
Ugh, yeah. Guaranteed to get you a few bricks through your front window.
Yeah.
I don't need these bricks here. They go through your front window, motherfucker.
I do like the back of the Henry and Glenn Forever book. It says, quote, has Glenn seen this? Trust me, he would not be amused, Henry.
Yeah. Here's another quote. Another quote from Henry is like, hey, if only this was real.
Yeah, exactly. That's the thing. You know, it's accurate for Henry.
Oh, yeah.
It's accurate for both.
Oh, yeah, probably.
It is. No, I know from word of mouth.
Well, I know you've heard stuff about Henry, but you've heard stuff about Glenn, too.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Oh, interesting.
Mm. Oh, yeah. Like, solid, like concrete.
Okay.
Shit. All right. Really? Yeah. That's, wow. I'd never heard that before.
I never heard that.
You know me. You know me. I know a lot of people. So let's just say I heard from a pretty good source.
Hey, I'm people who knows people.
Yeah, there's a reason he's not married and has never been seen with a chick anywhere.
Well, yeah, it's kind of like David Lee Roth or something. Like,
yeah.
Danzig's videos and his albums are full of like buxom beauties.
Yeah.
But when it comes to him as a person, you never see him with a woman. You never see David Lee Roth with a woman outside of a music video or a photo shoot.
No. Right. David Lee Roth was engaged or seriously dating Sonia Braga in the 80s. And
oh, my goodness.
If you look hard, you can find those. But he kept it very hidden. He didn't want it getting out. But, yeah, he was – and he still, I think, is trying to learn. He's always taking Portuguese lessons so he can – you know, get around in Brazil easily. But yeah, he was seriously involved with Sonia Braga for a couple of years. And that only was revealed maybe 5 years ago. Like, articles.
He must have seen her in the Clint Eastwood film The Rookie and said, wow!
I think he saw her in like Donna Florida or Two Husbands or something. He was like, whoa! I'm gonna just use up right there. You know,
one great, you know, coming up.
Yeah. Wow. And then he played like Van Halen played huge crowds in Brazil, so it wouldn't be too surprising.
Not that I remember.
He met her and something started. Yeah. We didn't remember. But it's like that is one I can say that he was known to have dated. That's the only famous chick that he dated, you know, and there's stories out there that there's always been rumors about him, but there's also been rumors that he's a one night stand guy with ladies and just doesn't want to get married because I think he's autistic or something, and he's
well,
just
I wouldn't he knows surprise me. I mean, interviews with like, him seems
he knows he's hard to get along with. Apparently, like he knows it, so I don't know, but he has put it down as like, oh, well, I'm somewhat autistic and I'm hard to get along with.
Danzig,
for a long stretch.
One love was Chuck Biscuits. Oh, sorry, that was Soggy Biscuits. Wrong person.
No, he was really. Danzig was really into Marilyn Monroe when he was a teenager, and
yeah,
was kind of like odd. Yeah,
that does kind of add to the. I don't know. Being really into Marilyn Monroe, like fixated, does kind of add to the gay possibilities, though.
Maybe. Yeah,
and
you know,
Elvira. Oh, Vampyra. Sorry,
he was into Vampyra. Yeah, he met her.
Yeah,
yeah.
There's a whole picture with her and the Misfits. But we're far away from the darkness, and we got to talk about this first record, guys.
Yeah, we do.
Because this album, I got it. Because I haven't really talked about my relationship with the darkness, and this album was very unexpected trip down memory lane for me. So,
okay, so just go back a bit. Had you listened to much of them before?
Okay, so this? So my memory of the darkness was fuzzier than I thought. The thing is, when I put on Permission to Land, when I was listening to it for this show, I knew every single song on it.
Oh, cool.
And I was going, oh my gosh, I used to listen to this album a lot and I totally forgot about it. When I was a freshman in college, I must have listened to this thing on repeat and forgot about it.
Nice.
I must have listened to it on repeat and then never listened to it again after like a few months or something. Because like, I was listening to Black Shuck, Get Your Hands Off of My Woman, Growing on Me. I was like, oh my gosh, I know the words to all these songs.
Yeah,
like,
it's an infectious record for sure.
I was like, oh my gosh, every song is like just slinging it. It was great. I was like sitting there going, I mean, when you brought up The Darkness, I was like, oh, I remember, you know, A Thing Called Love or whatever. But when I listened to the album, I was like, oh, you know, I did listen to this album a lot. And the reason I forgot was that I never purchased it. And before you say like, oh, you know, you pirated it or whatever, at the school at Rhodes, if you shared your iTunes library on the network, you could look at anyone's iTunes library at school. And so there was somebody who had it on there and I was listening to it a lot.
Okay, so this was not in 03 then, obviously, because iTunes wasn't even around then, was it?
Yeah, it was.
In 03?
I believe so. Yeah, because that's when I was in college, and in 03, it might have been 04. It might have been in the spring. Yeah, iTunes. Let's see. When did iTunes first get released? 2001. So
holy crap! Yeah. Really?
Yeah.
Damn. I didn't know. I thought it was like about 2008, 2009.
Mm-mm.
Oh, nice.
No, because I remember using it my freshman year of college. Okay. But anyway, so I actually forgot how much I had listened to this album. So anyway, this album was released July 7th, 2003. It was produced by Pedro Ferreira. Ferreira? I don't know. Anyway, and the lineup, we have Justin Hawkins on vocals, lead and rhythm guitar, synthesizer and piano. You have Dan Hawkins on rhythm and lead guitar. And he is the brother of Justin Hawkins. You have Frankie Poulain on bass and Ed Graham on drums. Mm-hmm. And the track listing, you have Black Shuck, Get Your Hands Off of My Woman, Growing on Me, I Believe in a Thing Called Love, Love is Only a Feeling, Given Up, Stuck in a Rut, Friday Night, Love on the Rocks with No Ice, and Holding My Own. So, Stuart.
Yeah.
You're a big Darkness guy. What are your thoughts on Permission to Land?
Perfect. It's absolutely perfect. It's not a bad note, not a bad song. I can't even tell you how many times I've heard this album. It's got to be hitting 25 plus easily over the years. If it'd be more, I dare say. It breezes by at whatever the 40-minute running time is. It feels like it's about half that.
Yeah, it's about 38 minutes.
Yeah. Like I said, I literally love every song on here, every one of them.
Mm-hmm.
And but I picked it up when it came out. I Believe in a Thing Called Love was the one that was big here. I think that was the first single from memory, and it was just played everywhere on the radio.
Oh, it was you couldn't escape it. It was huge.
Yeah, went out and picked it up pretty much straight away just based on that song alone. I thought, well, if the album's like this, hopefully, then this is going to be a killer album. And yeah, I was not disappointed. Actually, I mean, I like that song a lot, but I think there's better ones on there than that. It's just that would be probably the most famous one of theirs from that record anyway.
Yeah, it definitely is. It's their most famous song, period, I think. I mean, because most people heard it when it came out. And, John, you and I have talked – I think we all three of us, in fact, have talked on this show about that sort of period in the early 2000s and the early aughts when there was this kind of rock revival where you had a lot of bands coming out like Jet, like The Darkness, like The Strokes.
White Stripes. The Strokes. Who are the Vines? There were a ton of these bands. It was just one after the other.
And,
yeah, they actually thought like this old school garage punk semi-glam sound was going to be the next big thing again. And it seemed like it was for a couple of years. Like the White Stripes were huge. They played Red Rocks, and Jet got really big for a couple of years.
Oh yeah, like the thing is like a lot. Some of these bands did have sort of a sustained impact. Like the White Stripes, you know,
yeah,
had several big records. Jack White's still kind of a fixation today, but the Strokes.
You had other bands as well, like smaller ones like Turbo Negro.
Oh yeah.
Strong cult followings, plus Little Steven's Underground Garage actually had massive syndication on rock stations across the country, which would have been unheard of in the 90s or even the 80s. And there seemed to be this this revival. Like somebody actually asked me, well, what do you think now that your kind of music is big again? You know, because I was the guy with all the Ramones CDs and the Suite and T-Rex and all that. And I was like, well, it's exciting. I can actually buy a lot of this stuff, and I like these new bands. So, like when I saw the Darkness video on MTV2 for the first time, I was blown away. I was like, oh my god, somebody's actually got that sweet Queen like British glam rock sound and is bringing it back. I couldn't believe it.
Yeah,
I was obsessed with it. I was obsessed with getting a copy of the album like that week after I saw the video, and they were playing it constantly. Like they really believed in it.
Yeah, they made videos as well that were also very conducive to selling the album. I mean, it wasn't like it was just them on a crappy stage and that was like a Poison video, which was just fucking stupid to watch. You know, you watch those ones now, you think these are just a joke. It was actually the thing that I found with the Darkness was their humor. They always laughed at themselves, you know.
Yeah, and Americans didn't know what to make of that, so I don't think the videos could really sell the American audiences are strange. I didn't understand why they weren't the biggest band in the world in America. And then I would read the English music mags. And of course, they're the biggest group going in England. They're the biggest thing there since like the Oasis and Blur, you know, Britpop explosion in the 90s. They were just massive. And they were seen as like a relief from Radiohead and Coldplay, which were these groups that took themselves too serious,
and
like way too seriously.
Grunge had died by that time as well.
Yeah, exactly. And they were like Justin Hawkins would give these kind of trolling interviews, like, "Oh, I haven't bought a CD since Aerosmith's Pump, and I've never heard Nirvana," and just all this kind of goofy stuff. Yeah. Like, and it's obviously just words meant to slam, like they walked out of a time warp. But I got it. Like, I love the guitars, and I love the whole throwback to the English glitter rock sound. I was like, oh man, you know, these guys have got to get huge here. And then I realized, nope, listeners over here think music is supposed to be dressing up like a couch potato and warbling about nonsense. Nobody has a sense of fun. They're going to look at this video. They're going to go, oh, they're all gay, even though these are the type of music listeners will act like they're all, you know, so open to the gay community. But, you know, they'll look at the Darkness and go, oh, this is fruity. They're making fun of metalheads or something. So people take themselves too seriously for some reason.
Well, you know, it's
great tunes.
My thing with – in America, I've noticed popular music is whatever seems the most attainable for the average person. So,
yeah.
Like, you know, it was when the rock band came out, you needed four people. It seemed a little – it was the music structures were pretty simple. It was pretty attainable. Now, it's like a person with a laptop making electronic music.
Yeah.
I listen to a top 40 station sometimes in the car, and it just all sounds like robot music to me.
Yeah.
Like,
and
I don't know how anybody gets their head around it.
Yeah. Like they just – they like whatever they kind of listen to, and they go, oh, I can do that. So like – you know, you had the glam stuff for a little bit that was over the top, but that was because like MTV was kind of new and, you know, you wanted something visual. But then like it became like, oh, no, we have to wear jeans and like plaid and look sad.
And we got to stare down at our shoes and look like we're waiting for the apocalypse.
I hate all that shoe goop. I hate that shoegazer garbage. I never got into this band.
I went and saw a band here, a local band called Hellenic Zeal. These idiots touted themselves as the saviors of rock. I'm like, okay, that's a big statement. You fucking better be. So they were playing one night just at a pub here. And I went and saw them, and they were piss awful. Oh, God, they were just fucking horrible. Just horrible. Horrible, horrible band. So, I mean, bands, and what I'm getting at is bands like that who run around screaming that the saviors of rock, you better fucking be able to back it up. And, yeah these dickheads couldn't. And they disappeared, thankfully.
But to me, like, most of these bands that came around in the early 2000s, like, that were these kind of throwback rock bands, like, you had your some that had some sustained success, but most of them, like Jet and The Darkness, were around for a few years and then kind of folded. And, of course, The Darkness didn't stay folded, but it sort of seemed like they had that brief hit of success, and then it was sort of like the audiences sort of left and they sort of, you know, either became cult bands or disappeared altogether. Would Monster Magnet fall into that category, John, or were they more 90s?
Yeah, they were big for like 2 years, I guess. Or
yeah,
three,
like Power Trip and Dopes to Infinity.
Yeah, and then they just fell into being a cult act again. It was weird. He plays even smaller venues than The Darkness now.
Yeah.
And it's just really strange. It's nothing I can figure out. And of course, he blames it on the George Bush presidency.
Yeah, the George Bush presidency, man.
It's more like your type of music was just on the outs. By 2004, I think the whole garage rock, metal, you know, being inspired by the Stooges, it was already dead. It was only big for like 2 years, and then it was dead again.
Plus, yeah, they never broke here either. Monster Magnet, no one, they were never big here at all.
Yeah, they broke big in the U.S. for like a year or two, and had the Cult opening for them at one point at a stadium show, and then they were getting that big, and it's because they had videos on MTV. That's really what it's all based on. Is getting
was it Negasonic?
Right.
Warhead was on Beavis and Butthead.
Right, and also they had a video that got a lot of play that had Vegas dancers and stuff. And
it was Space Lord.
Yeah, that played on MTV all the time. MTV pushed them, and that's what it took. It's like he doesn't want to admit that MTV was pushing him, but that's really what it was.
Who's that lead singer of Monster Magnet? What's his name?
Dave Windorf.
That's Windorf. Yeah, Dave Windorf. Yeah.
I mean, the band was really sold on his look alone, a lot of it.
Well, he is that band.
Yeah.
I mean, he looks like a 70s rock star. Like, he looks like something out of a Richard Linklater movie or something.
And that's not going to carry you much. And he's an old guy, too. He's way older than he admits. And it's just, you know, you have to look appealing to women. Sadly, to sell a band like that.
Well, that's the thing. It's like, to play stadiums, women have to be buying your albums and stuff.
Right.
Like, and if your audience is dudes, you're playing, like, clubs and maybe stages at best, you know.
Yeah, like, Motorhead played theaters here. They played mid-sized theaters.
Most metal bands that are successful play theaters, you know. That's their bread and butter.
Yeah. And Monster Magnet is back to clubs. Very small clubs.
Right, right.
It's all Trump's fault this time now, isn't it?
It's Trump's fault that he's playing the Marquee Theater.
It wasn't Obama's fault, though. He didn't do it.
He doesn't do anything.
Yeah, for whatever reason. Because Obama was really a big fan of The Seeds and Hawkwind. And
he
talked about
having
that on his iTunes.
Right.
Along with his Bob Dylan that he claimed to have.
Okay, so what's your favorite? This is a hard question. But, Stuart, what's your favorite track on Permission to Land?
All right. To narrow it down to one, it's probably going to seem a bit odd choice. I really like Stuck in a Rut. It's probably my favorite on there.
Nice. It's a good deep cut there.
It's not to say the others are not listenable, because they certainly are.
Oh, no, this is an album. It's very hard to pick a favorite. And what would you give it as a rating, Stu?
Oh, it's a 10. I mean, 10. It is a genuine 10. I'm not just saying that flippantly going, oh, it's a 10, oh, it's perfect. No, it is a genuine 10. If I can listen to something that many times that I have and not skip any tracks and just enjoy every second of it, it's a perfect 10 for me.
Yeah. John, what about you?
favorite song?
My favorite song is Growing on Me.
Ah, that's my favorite as well.
Yeah, it's like it's the perfect radio single, and I really thought it was going to make them the biggest band in America. And, no, everybody wanted to go listen to Coldplay.
That song is a real earworm. Like, you know, all of it, like Get Your Hands Off My Woman, Love on the Rocks with No Ice. Like all Black Shuck, these are all earworms. Like, you know, you can't get them out of your head. But Growing on Me is one that like is like, yes, when I hear it.
Yeah, it's a great tune, and I mean it's a perfect album. It's like a 10.
Yeah, you know what? I am going to give it a 10 as well. My favorite's
seriously, it is my last favorite album, I think, that I would give a 10 of the last 15 fucking years. Maybe Turbo Negro's Apocalypse Dudes, and that's it. There's just not a lot that I loved.
I've got to say, like, when I listened to this album again, I was floored. I could not believe how much I was like, first off, I was like, oh my gosh, I remember all of these songs now, and they're all awesome.
Yeah.
Like, it was one of those things where I was like, why have I not like kept up with this band? Because obviously I listened to this album a lot back in 2003, 2004. It's totally great. I mean, this is a band that really crafted these songs, that really worked them out. Like, I think they started in 2000, so over 3 years they really ironed these out and threw them out there. And
the only problem I find with this album is nothing to do musically. It's the fact that they got too big too fast. And
And
when we get further into the story of the darkness, it's going to show the negative side effect of that.
Totally. No, that is absolutely the only problem with this record, is that it did them big favors in the short term. In the long term, it actually kind of hurt them.
Yeah, it did. And also started a trend of darkness albums that the last song on the album was always a slower track.
Yeah, they put the ballad at the end.
At the end, yeah.
And I will say, like, Holding My Own is not, like, my favorite song on there, but
it'd probably be the weakest, but it's still good. But if you put it up against the others, it's a tough ask.
Yeah.
But anyway, for me, same as John, 10 out of 10. Growing on Me. But let's do the next record. 2005, released November 28th. We have One Way Ticket to Hell and Back. And this one is produced by Roy Thomas Baker, who produced a lot of Queen stuff.
Oh, yeah. And boy, doesn't it show on this album.
Oh my goodness. Yes, it does. And the lineup... We have Justin and Dan Hawkins back in their roles. You have Ed Graham on drums and Richie Edwards on bass. So we've had some lineup changes there.
Frankie Pullane had left and had gone and written a book as well at the time about his time in the darkness.
Have you read it?
I've not read it. I do want to. I believe it's called Dancing in the Darkness. And if you go to Amazon... I don't know about Amazon.com in the US. May have it. I know Amazon UK has it. I think you even get a Kindle version for a couple of pounds, if I'm not mistaken. I would need to check into that. But yeah, I've not read it, and I do want to, though, because later on, Frankie would come back, and yeah, we'll get into that later on.
Well, let's look at the track listing. We have 10 tracks. You've got One Way Ticket, Knockers, Is It Just Me, Dinner Lady Arms, Seemed Like a Good Idea at the Time, Hazel Eyes, Bald, Girlfriend, English Country Garden, and Blind Man. Stuart, let's start with you. What do you think of this record?
I really enjoyed it a lot. It took me a little while to get into it. I picked it up basically day one when it came out. Just shortly after my birthday, it would have been, from memory. And I'm like, this is a bit different sounding. It's still a rock album, don't get me wrong. But this is the greatest Queen album Queen never made. That was my, sort of summation of it after I'd listened to the album. Took me a few listens, not many, but a few to get into it. But now I think it's a fucking great album. It really is.
Okay. John, what about you?
I never liked it. It completely disappointed me when I bought it the day of release, and I think I only liked 2 songs on it, and listening to it again this week, it's not as bad as I remember, but I still can remember just
you know, being really annoyed that I found it underwhelming. I don't know if it was a Roy Thomas Baker production or certain personal issues going on behind the scenes were interfering with the sound, but it did not move me the way the first one did. And that's kind of the problem with starting off with a great record and then coming out with another one 2 years later in the current version of the music industry. And it just
you
wasn't.
Have the sophomore slump, you know?
Yeah. I just, I don't hate it. It's listenable. It's just that after Permission to Land, this was like a total step back for me. I just remember my disappointment. I mean, it wasn't as bad as the Weirdness by the Stooges.
Oh, yeah, that's terrible.
Where I wanted to trade that in.
That's a 1 out of 10 right there.
Yeah, it's like, it's an awful, awful record. And but this was, it was just the problem was it was a decent record, and I expected if you want blood, you got it from them or something, you know, or Leave Home or something, you know. I wanted something on that level, or Led Zeppelin too. I thought they would just get bigger and meaner and, you know, more aggressive, and it's a real step back. Comparisons to a Queen record are pretty apt, I guess.
Oh yeah.
My thing with this record is that the first Darkness album I thought was taking a lot of influences from 70s rock and 80s rock and sort of put it into this blender, and, you know, you got the Darkness. This album feels too much like the specific identity of other bands to me, like Queen.
Yeah.
And I feel like Justin Hawkins' voice, while it sort of stood on its own sort of quirky falsetto weirdness in Permission to Land, in this one it feels overproduced to me. It feels like they're trying to do like Freddie Mercury style things with it.
But that's
harmonies.
Roy Thomas Baker. He's just one of those guys who overproduces everything. He's never been a minimalist producer.
Right. I mean, and I get that. And it sort of felt to me like going from Ted Templeton to like Bob Ezrin or something. And here's the thing. I do get that that's Roy Thomas Baker style, but that's definitely what they wanted. Like, they were wanting him to do Queen style stuff with them. You know, he's done a lot of great records. Like, I'm not
Cheap Trick's One on One.
Yeah, I was about to say One on One. Great album.
One of the best Cheap Trick albums.
He did some stuff with Yes. He did stuff with Hawkwind.
ELO and
Smashing Pumpkins. Oops.
Yeah, I'll edit that out. Don't worry.
Yeah. But anyway. But to me, I thought this album was kind of a misstep. And, you know, I've only listened to it once, so maybe on subsequent viewings it would grow on me. I mean, subsequent listenings, I should say. Movie podcast. But to me, it felt too much like, okay, we're kind of a classic rock throwback band. Let's do a Queen album, you know. And
yeah.
It's not
a Queen tribute record.
Yeah, that's what it kind of felt like. And so that's not really – after listening to Permission to Land, listening to a sort of Queen-style rock album from this group was not really what I wanted from the second record. And, you know, who knows? Maybe if I go listen to it, maybe I'll appreciate it for its own little quirks or whatever. But
we have to let the listeners know as well at the time, Justin Hawkins' ego and drug habit had exploded.
Well, and that's what would that's another problem with a band getting too big too fast.
Yeah.
Is if you have a proclivity for drugs and alcohol, it's going to go crazy once you get big.
If you look at footage of Justin Hawkins at this time, he's very bloated. He's not the, you know, wiry, thin-looking guy that he is on Permission to Land, and especially now. He's cleaned his life up and gotten sober and all that. I remember they were touring here around that time, and I couldn't go. I really wanted to go to the show, but I just started my job that I'm still in now and couldn't get the night off.
Mm-hmm.
But from what the accounts I read were in the Free Press magazine it was not a good show. Hawkins was wasted. Justin Hawkins, that is, sorry, was wasted. And it was basically, you could tell, apparently the writer was saying there was a lot of tension on the stage, which is like, well, that's not the show I want to see. The one I did see in 2012 when they were all back together, the original band, and a lot more harmonious, is the one I wanted to see, which was, like I said before, fantastic. but they were all over MTV here as well, and you know, doing videos, and yeah, he was not in a good state, Justin Hawkins.
Mm. Yeah, because I was kind of wondering, like, you know, having an album that, because you know, this album didn't have the radio play that the first one had, so drugs and alcohol plus, like, maybe not like putting out a kind of having a sophomore slump record in terms of sales. And I don't know how it did compared to the first one, but I don't think it was.
It did bad.
I think it was a really expensive album too. Like, I think it cost a lot. And it sounds like it. You know,
and honestly, being around a producer like Roy Thomas Baker, who's notorious for his cocaine addiction, probably not a good idea.
All right, so Stu, you like this record. What's your favorite song off of it?
Favorite song is It Just Me, but I do have plenty of others as well on there. I do like Bald. I think it's a great, heavy, slower rock song.
Yeah, that's definitely the heaviest rock song on here.
I like English Country Garden. Lady Dinner Arms I like as well. I like quite a few. There's probably about a couple on there that I'm like, they're okay, but I don't dislike them. So I think if one really stands out to me, it's Is It Just Me. I think that should have been that should have been a hit, that one right there, but just wasn't.
And what would you give it as a rating?
I've got 8.5 for it.
Oh, wow. Okay. John, what would you give? What's your favorite off this? If you have?
Is It Just Me is like the obvious, the natural single when you hear it, when you listen to it. It's a great tune. I just don't like the rest of the album that much. Although the first track is okay. You know, it's a 5 for me. It's just a 5. And which is unfortunate, but I considered trading it in. I was surprised I still had my CD on the shelf. I didn't know. I didn't remember if I'd traded it in or not. I was so disappointed.
John, honestly,
is it just me?
John, hold on to it. Hold on to it and give it a few more listens.
Yeah,
it may grow on you.
Yeah, I'm not gonna trade it in.
No,
yeah,
no.
I'm gonna have to. I gotta spin it some more. So, and I realized that listening to it this week, I go, I'm not hating this as much as I did on the day of release. So, or the first week I owned it, and then tossed it into the closet to gather dust. But
that's the, like, thing. Everybody was waiting for Permission to Land Part 2, and it was never going to be that.
Yeah.
And I was guilty of that as well. Right. But once I managed to push that aside and say, right, let's listen to the record for what it is, I got a more of a fonder appreciation for it.
Yeah.
All right. What about you, Hunter?
Well, I'm going to give it a 5 as well. I think my favorite song, like, I don't really have one, but like Dinner Lady Arms kind of jumped out at me a little bit. And English Country Garden.
What about Bald?
Bald, I thought, had some good heavy riffs in there, too.
It's got some funny lyrics on this album as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the band would break up after this because of drugs and...
No, the band would implode heavily and very famously as well.
Yeah. It was... I remember kind of going, hey, The Darkness, whatever happened to them? And seeing that they broke up not too long after this record. But... they would eventually get back together, and in 2012,
Let's just stop there for a second, because Justin Hawkins did put out an album called Hot Leg in 2007, which there's some tracks on there that are very Darkness-like. If you want to hear something besides the four albums we're doing today, try and track it down. Good luck finding it. It's as rare as rock and horse shit to find these days.
I never found it. Never found it. I was looking for it when I heard about it. Never found it.
Yeah. It's a little different, but there are, like I said, there's some tracks in there that are really, I would say, probably holdovers from the Darkness catalog. But they also did release, I believe in 2004, the single Christmas Time, Don't Let the Bells End, which is the greatest Christmas song ever. And one I play every Christmas Eve. It's just... yeah, that's a single that's on, you know, it's, you can find it easily enough on compilations or, you know, other things out there. But there was also another thing as well. The Darkness, when they would release a single, they wouldn't just release the song and that's it. They would release three other tracks as well, two or three other tracks of theirs. Mm. So I know somebody out there compiled all those first two albums bonus songs. So it's basically like another Darkness album, really. And there's some great ones on there, like Shake Like a Lettuce Leaf, Shit Ghost, and Bareback. There's a lot of tracks up there that you can if you can find this thing. Or, you know, if you've got iTunes, the iTunes that you can have for a month and you pay, like Spotify, you may find them on there as well. to listen to. So yeah, there's that.
And I think doesn't he have another band called like
I know Dan Hawkins was touring a band around 2009 called The Real Darkness or something like that, some other alternate name, but it was very short-lived, I think.
But they would get back together.
Thankfully.
And, yeah, and they would put out the album Hot Cakes, August 20th, 2012. And you have the lineup. You have Justin Hawkins, Dan Hawkins. You have Frankie Poulin back on bass guitar and Ed Graham on drums. And you have a guest appearance from Ian Anderson of Jethro Tull.
Why? How the hell is Jethro Tull even popular? They're one of the most boring ass bands ever.
That's only on the deluxe edition. song Cannonball. But I just thought that was funny. This one's produced by the band. It's produced by Justin and Dan Hawkins, as well as Nick Brine, who's their engineer. But the track listing for the just basic edition, I don't do the deluxe edition track listing. You have Every Inch of You, Nothing's Gonna Stop Us, With a Woman, Keep Me Hanging On, Living Each Day Blind, Everybody Have a Good Time, She's Just a Girl, Eddie, Forbidden Love, Concrete, Street Spirit Fade Out, which is a Radiohead cover, speaking of the serious English bands, and Love Is Not the Answer. All right. So what'd you think of the comeback record, Stu?
Okay. Heard it was coming out. Really, really excited to hear there was going to be new music from The Darkness. They first released Nothing's Going to Stop Us via a link onto their website. Watched it because it was actually a video and thought, oh my God, this is like they never stopped. This is like perfect Darkness. Got the album and I gotta say, I really like it a lot.
John, what about you?
This is unique because it's the first time I went to a record store and they sold me the CD a week before its street date because I asked for it.
Shit.
And this is a local independent record store. It's got the personal touch. The employees were cool. Still are. I mean, I haven't been there in a while, but they're really cool because they're, you know, it's what a record store should be, run by actual fans of music. And they said, oh, we'll sell it to you. You know, we'll just, I got it back in the box. We'll just go ahead and sell it to you. She had to do something like she had to take a sticker off or something, or should do some unique thing and sold it to me. And I listened to it and I really dug it. I thought it was a very, very cool, comeback for them. And, it was a return of some fun rock and, let's face it, they're pretty much the only group doing this these days.
I thought this album was the worthy successor to Permission to Land.
Yeah.
I think this album is of a similar quality. You have a lot of great songs. And it sort of has more of that fun spirit the first record has.
More of a stripped back rock sound. It's not overproduced like my ticket. Yeah.
Right.
Big 70s AC/DC influence.
Thin Lizzy, yeah.
I think With a Woman, it had riffs that reminded me of like Bad Boy Boogie from AC/DC and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But no, I loved this album. This one I could see myself listening to a lot more in the future because, again, it feels like the band's hungry. Like they've sort of reevaluated. They're sort of got that fire back in them.
Yeah.
So, favorite song, Stu, what do you think?
Oh, man. Nothing's going to stop us now. It's perfect. It's pure perfection. And there's lots of others on there I like as well. I actually like the Radiohead cover, Street Spirit.
Me too. I was listening to it, and then I was like, this is that Radiohead song.
Yeah.
I was listening to it, and then I was like, it's awesome. That was good. Because that's actually one of the few Radiohead songs I actually like. But... hearing it interpreted like that, I thought was fantastic. I was like, I thought it was better than the original, personally. But.
Yeah, oh yeah, yeah. I was not familiar with the original. I had to go back and find it and listen to it. I'm like, Darkness version is much better.
Oh, yeah.
I like Everybody Have a Good Time as well. That's more one of a party song of theirs. Every Inch of You I like. I think it's a funny as fuck song. There's quite a few on here I like. There's not that many bad tracks. at all. And as a comeback album, yeah, I couldn't have asked for much better. Considering it was 7 years between the second album to the third one, it's hard to get your mojo back after that period of time.
Yeah, it really is. And to put out a record this good, I think, is surprising. So so what would you give this, Stu?
I've got it as an 8.
Cool. John, what about you?
Favorite song is Concrete.
Nice.
Yeah, because I listened to it for the first time in the last couple of days. Like in a few years, I hadn't pulled it off the shelf because it's one of those after I bought it, I probably played it nonstop for 2 weeks and then put it on the shelf. And I really like the tune Concrete, and I think it's a really terrific album. I give it an 8.5. It's as good a comeback as cool. I could expect for them. Yeah.
Well, my favorite song is With a Woman. That one has like a really kind of kick you in the face rock element to it. And I love this album. I think it's, for me, just initial impression. I've listened to it once, but I would give it a 9, I think.
Oh, wow.
I thought it was really good. It's not as good as Permission to Land, but...
Oh, that's a hard ask, though.
Yeah, but I thought it was just a really fun album. And, you know, I thought it was a real return to form after being kind of disappointed by One Way Ticket to Hell and Back. So the band would soldier on in 2015, May 27th. They would release The Last of Our Kind, which is to date their latest album, although I believe they have a new one coming this year. And this one, you have Justin and Dan Hawkins, Frankie Poulin on bass, and Emily Dolan Davies on drums. So we have a different drummer. Sounds from the sounds of it, a female drummer.
It's a chick.
It's a girl. Oh, hickory dickory dock. But the track listing, you have 10 songs. You have Barbarian, Open Fire, Last of Our Kind, Roaring Waters, Wheels of the Machine, Mighty Wings, Mudslide, Sarah O'Sarah, Hammer and Tongs, and Conquerors. Okay, so this one, and it's produced by Dan Hawkins. So Dan took up the producer role on this one. Stuart, what do you think?
Okay, probably the weakest of the four for me. A little bit of a letdown. Not much, a little bit. It's probably because it's still the newest in terms of their catalog. I mean, yes, it's 2 years old now, but... And the one I've heard the least, it does suffer a little bit from the loudness war, which I was not happy with.
That's not unique to.
Yeah. That's a whole show there. But the God forbidden loudness war, just horrible. But I mean, it's still a solid effort, as good as the other three for me. No, but if someone said, "Hey, would you recommend it?" I'd still say yes for sure.
Yeah, I don't think this is a bad record in the slightest. John, what did you think?
I heard it for the first time yesterday. I wasn't even aware that it was released.
I didn't know about it either. I knew that they had come back and released a record, but I didn't know about this one. So
yeah, I just don't keep up with new rock releases very much. I thought it was okay. It's kind of strange they're going into the medieval rock type of thing, and I was wondering if there might have been Hawkwind influence or something, but they're not as distorted and loony as Hawkwind can sound. And that's not a diss. Hawkwind's one of my favorite bands, but I thought it was a decent record. Like I liked it more than One Way Ticket just on the listen, but there's some weak tracks on here. I feel like the second half of the album is actually really weak.
I agree.
It's almost like, let's get this wrapped up and do some ballads and let's get this over with. And it has that feel. Like, it starts off with a lot of energy and some interesting ideas, and then by the second half of the album, is just they run out of steam.
Yeah, I thought the same thing, that the first half was really strong, but then the second half, it kind of falls off a bit. Like, it had some moments I liked, but overall, it was not
too cool. If it had stopped at Mighty Wings, I think it would have been a really good EP.
Yeah, yes. Good EP, yeah.
Yeah.
So, for me, I feel the same way. I mean, I really like some of the songs on it. I thought Barbarian was a lot of fun. I mean, yeah, it's going into the kind of Hawkwind, maybe a little bit of Nawabum influences there. Open Fire and not just the title, kind of made me think of Y&T a little bit.
Yeah, it's not the Y&T tune. The Y&T tune is better.
No, it is better, but although I did like that song. it did make me think of Dave Menichetti, though, a little bit.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, and Barbarian even just was kind of like entertainingly cheesy. but yeah, it's got sort of that medieval like Ren Faire thing going on. Stuart, what's your favorite song on it?
I've got two. I like Roaring Waters and Mighty Wings.
Nice. Mighty Wings has some good riffs.
So like Roaring Waters has got some killer riffs on there. I sat down and thought, oh man, if only the whole album was like this, it'd probably be as good as Permission to Land, but not quite.
And what would you give it?
I'll give it a 6.5 still. I think it's still an entertaining album. It is the weakest of the four. The Darkness, I've worked out, though, suffer from the reverse Star Trek syndrome.
Where what's that?
Well, Star Trek, they say, well, the films, every second film is the good ones.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas the Darkness, every odd numbered release is the good ones.
Yes.
So with the fifth one coming up this year, we should be in for a good slab of rock, I dare say.
Yeah, I dare say you're right. John, favorite song, what's your overall evaluation?
Favorite tune is Mighty Wings, and I think it's like almost a little over half a good record, so I'd give it a 6.
Yeah, I would give it a 6 as well, and my favorite's Barbarian. I like the opener a lot. I think it's good, like cheesy, fun, you know, rock. I like it, and I like the cover of the album as well, with like the weird mohawk guy with the darkness sunglasses and the oxygen mask. It's cool. I like it. I dig it.
Yeah, it looks like a late 70s sort of the type of record you would see on a Casablanca release or something.
Yeah. Casablanca, yeah.
With their idea of what a punker is supposed to look like or something, yeah. Mixed with Heavy Metal magazine of the late
70s. It is very, it's Metal Herlant.
Yes, let's get that vibe. So, hey, maybe I'll see them on tour if they come through.
They've got a new album coming out this year. So yeah,
September, my friends. I can't wait.
I'm excited.
And they were just here as well in May.
Shit.
Yeah. For some reason, I thought they were from Australia, but they're not.
No.
Maybe it's just because you like them.
Can't you tell they're British? My goodness, man.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Yeah, well, that was British. Before I was really listening to them, but...
When I saw their video, I was like, they're British.
Oh, yeah. You can just tell in the inflection of Justin Hawkins' voice. You just, it's like, mate, there is fucking British as Saxon. Didn't you know that, mate?
Didn't you know it?
Yeah.
Oi. You
fucking stupid twat.
Oi.
When I saw their video, I was like, they're British and everybody over here is going to think they're gay.
Yeah.
Because Justin Hawkins was wearing like a tiara on the thing called Love video, and it just didn't help.
You imagine some Italian guy in New York saying, "Yeah, he's just perpetuating the Brits are fags, man."
Yeah, it's like I listen to them. Hey, I want to hear that. I go to the East Village.
Yeah, these British fags. What are they, all fags in the UK? In London, I think London's the country.
Yeah, that's. I hate to say it, but that's pretty much that was probably the private opinion of a lot of listeners and viewers at the time. So
yeah. So yep, new one and a documentary as well.
Yep,
in the works.
Is that coming out?
No, mate. We're gonna make it and shelve the fucker. What do you think? That's gonna
well,
come out.
You know, we gotta do that.
Yeah, on the show. I know. It'll come out, but when? I mean, who knows? You know. These things take forever. I mean, we're still waiting on the Y&T documentary to come out, which has been, good heavens, at least a couple of years in the making.
I just hope the docs don't make me dislike them like Lemmy did.
Lemmy's was unique. I think you get as bad as the duck I was a Lemmy one. It's just not great. Yeah.
He just doesn't come off well. He just comes off like a drunk.
Because it's
poorly, the stuff with his son was creepy.
Yeah.
The shit, you know.
It was just. It really should have been just like a 30-minute day in the life of Lemmy bonus on live DVD. That's all it should have been. We didn't need 2 hours plus of that big ass waste of time. That's all it was. I mean, I'm kind of glad we got it because now Lemmy's gone. But it on the other side of the coin, it doesn't really do much for him.
No.
Yeah.
But this documentary, I'm looking forward to because you know, I just hope they really get into what happened in the breakup and, you know, shed some more light on what the whole thing was and the years in between leading up to 2012's third album, Hot Cakes, which this time around, when the fifth album's out, is the longest period that the Darkness have been around from the two halves of their career.
Oh, yeah.
First half, we only got the two albums, very quick, you know, in succession.
Yeah, it was very brief.
Very, very brief.
It was like a flash in the pan almost.
Yeah, so I'm glad they're actually stuck around for the long haul this time.
Yeah, no, it is good because, and, you know, I think it's one of those things where it's kind of set in that the music industry is not what it used to be and that, you know, it's about live music, you know. You put out a record every few years, but you don't need to, you know, sell millions of records. It's just not economically feasible for a rock band to do that. So they've kind of, I think, are learning how to exist in the current paradigm.
Plus, Justin Hawkins has kicked his drug and drink habit as well. He's completely clean. So
his drunk habit.
Yeah. He's drunk, mate. Get the fish and chips on a fucking Saturday night. No, he's kicked his drink and drugs habit. So I think he's got more of a much clearer perspective on life and, you know, what it is being in a band.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but I am looking forward to that new album.
Me too. Yeah, we'll have to do that documentary and maybe we can do a quick review of the record as well.
Of course, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, and just a quick side note, the new Cheap Trick album, very, very good.
Yeah, I've enjoyed what I've heard of it so far.
Hmm. No, I've only heard it once. I mean, yeah, as me instantly likable as Bang Zoom, no.
Bang Zoom is better. I've got to say, like, Bang, you know, Zoom's initial impression of Bang Zoom was like, yes!
Oh, yeah.
My initial impression of this one was, yeah, it's good.
It's good, you know? Yeah. It's good.
Yeah.
All right. Well, another year, another rock month is in the bag, guys.
Yeah, it is.
It's crazy.
It keeps coming around quicker and quicker every year.
I know. I mean, how many of these have we done? Like,
it's the fourth year, I think it is now. Yeah.
Hmm.
And just going back quickly to what you mentioned about Hawkins' side band, British Whale.
Mm.
I didn't know much about them, but I did know he did a cover of Sparks's "This Town Ain't Big Enough for the Both of Us," which I have heard, which I didn't realize was under the British Whale name. And it's okay. You know, it's a song that suits his vocal style, but he went way too over the top with his vocal delivery on it. It's way too high.
Oh.
You know, the one that's, I don't know if you're familiar with the song, Hunter, I know John is.
Yeah.
I do not know that song.
Okay. Yeah. But the version, the vocal delivery by the guy in Sparks is just right. Hawkins' one is way over the top.
Okay.
Although the video clip is very cool, where it's Justin Hawkins at a darts match. I think he's playing against Phil the Power Taylor, who is the greatest darts player of all time, because Justin Hawkins is a massive darts fan.
Oh, she.
I know that because I do watch the Premier League darts quite a bit. And remember back in 06 or 07, there was a match being played by two guys and they shot to a guy in the crowd and he's sitting there with his pint of beer and it was Justin Hawkins. So, yeah, he's a huge darts fan.
That's a very British, very non-American thing to state on the show.
Yes.
Is like, we cannot imagine darts being a big TV thing in America.
No, we definitely realize
it is huge. It's huge in England.
Oh, so it is. It fills out like 12,000 seat fucking stadiums. They'll just have people screaming. If you watch it, like, there is just, it's like watching a Led Zeppelin concert from the 70s. There's just people everywhere and these massive screens of these two guys throwing darts. It's fucking huge in the UK. It's getting big as well over here. I know they've had tournaments over here where it's sold out and it's like, shit, really?
This is why globalism will never work.
No, it won't work. I mean, you won't see a fully crowded theatre of a darts match in Somalia. That's for fucking sure.
Right, yeah.
Unless they poison darts, I guess. But no.
Oish.
Oish. So, anything else to add about the darkness, gentlemen?
The darkness?
The dorkness, the weirdness. Yeah. No, not the weirdness. We don't like that.
Yeah, you've just saved me, I don't know, 40 minutes listening to that. Or not listening to that album, I should say. By the Stooges. I'd never heard it before. Go check them out. If you are familiar with them from back in 03, 04, 05 era, check out their releases post that.
Yeah.
And the ones in 2012 and 15. If you've never heard them, run out and get permission to land.
Get permission to land, and if you like that, get Hot Cakes and go from there, you know.
Yeah.
And get one more ticket. Yeah, probably get those guys mentioned. Then get
I think the two essential ones are Hot Cakes and permission to land. Like those two are like must own.
Yeah. Although I would not, if someone said to me, hey, one-way ticket worth buying, I would say yes, for sure.
Yeah.
Just expect something different, that's all.
It's not a bad album. It's just, it's not what I kind of like about The Darkness, really. Yeah. It sort of felt a little much, but anyway. So, midnightmoviecowboys.com, everybody. Go on our website. You will see a PayPal donate button on the right-hand side. Give what you can. But if you can't, no matter. It don't matter. Just go to iTunes. Please rate and review. Give us 5 stars. Leave us a review. That really helps. I've noticed people have been doing that, so that's good. I like that.
Oh, nice.
Don't cost you nothing. Just go do it. And because it helps us out. It really does. And the more ears you get to us, by doing that, you get more people listening. More people listen. More people want to help us out. So that's another way you can help the cause. All right. This one's for the cause. So anyway, anything to add, guys? Anything to plug?
No.
Nope.
Thanks for listening, everybody. Appreciate it.
Next week, we will be back to our regularly scheduled movie programming. You know, you guys have been very patient with us doing all of our rock stuff, especially like it seems like an extended rock month with the Mentors episode.
And the Eagles of Death Metal as well.
Eagles of Death Metal, yeah. So like we're going to get back to movies next week.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. All right. Well, without further ado, anybody got anything else? No? No? Nope. All right. All right, well, we're going to go ahead and say adios.
Say Megadog.
Thank you for listening to the Midnight Movie Cowboys. For more information, go to www.midnightmoviecowboys.com. For feedback, comments, or show suggestions, go to midnightmoviecowboys@gmail.com. Like what you hear? Head on over to iTunes and leave us a review. Hear us on Stitcher Radio. Head over to stitcher.com and download the app. Want to help the show out? Head on over to www.midnightmoviecowboys.com and hit the PayPal donate. We appreciate all donations of any denomination. Find us on Twitter at MMCowboys. Like us on Facebook. Head over to facebook.com. Type in Midnight Movie Cowboys. Hit the like button over there. Want to friend us personally on Facebook or follow us on Twitter? Go to www.midnightmoviecowboys.com and find the links from there on the right-hand side. Thanks for listening. See you all next week.